Rebag, your premier destination for luxury resale. Elevate your style with our curated collection of bags, watches, and fine jewelry. At Rebag, quality is our priority. Each piece meticulously vetted and verified by experts, ensuring your investment is nothing short of perfection. Buy and sell finds from the world's top brands, including Hermes, Chanel, and Cartier. Access expertly crafted and hard-to-find pieces that redefine luxury. Your next investment awaits at Rebag. Get 10% off your first purchase with code REBAG10. That's 10% off the luxury you deserve. Don't miss out. Head to Rebag.com and enter code REBAG10 at checkout. That's REBAG10.
This podcast exists because of the paid members at DecodingTV.com. Sign up to be a paid member and get ad-free episodes, early access to episodes, and exclusive bonus episodes we'll make just for you. Thanks to everyone at DecodingTV.com who makes this podcast possible.
Remember when I was little? When I used to have bad dreams?
I remember.
You remember what you used to say? When you would hold me in the dark? Would you say it to me now?
In the end, this shadow is but a small and passing thing. There is light and high beauty, forever beyond its reach. Find the light, and the shadow will not find you.
Hello, everyone, and welcome to Decoding TV, a podcast about television. I am David Chen.
And I'm Don Marshall.
On today's episode of Decoding TV, we're going to be recapping and reviewing Season 1, Episode 6 of The Lord of the Rings, The Rings of Power, episode title Udun. Now, Don Marshall, what does Udun mean for those of us who don't know?
So folks that have watched the Fellowship of the Ring movie may recognize Udun as what Gandalf called the Balrog, the Flame of Udun. And Udun refers to basically a valley somewhere in Mordor. So a little bit of a potential spoiler if you know, but for most casual.
Well, this episode takes place mostly in the Southlands, nowhere near Mordor, right? So
yeah,
reason why it would relate at all.
Absolutely no reason.
But anyway, interesting. Yeah, a little bit of a spoiler. If you know your Lord of the Rings lore, then you might know where this episode's going to end up. But in any case, you can find more episodes of this podcast at podcast.decodingtv.com. Email us at decodingtv@gmail.com. Find us on YouTube and TikTok at decodingtv. Don Marshall, let's talk about Season 1, Episode 6. Overall thoughts. What did you think of this episode?
Overall thoughts, I really liked this episode. I thought there was quite a bit of payoff. I liked that we had sort of the converging of some of the plot lines coming together. David, you told me a very great piece of advice back in episode 2 for the title sequence. No thoughts, just vibes. And I took that to heart for the Harfoots, and now I've taken it for the rest of the show. And now this episode was no thoughts, just vibes. And the vibes are, oh my God. So loved it.
I will share a few of my thoughts. Overall, I thought it was a really well done piece of action filmmaking and to some degree horror filmmaking as well.
Yeah.
Just pretty well done. I will say that the amount of brutality in the episode really surprised me. Like,
yeah,
I am a hardened middle-aged dude. Okay, I have watched many horror films. I've watched every Saw film. I've watched every Final Destination film. Obviously, some of those movies are much goofier than the tone of The Rings of Power. But,
right.
But I guess I've seen some stuff in my life, Don Marshall, okay? Yeah. I've seen upsetting things in my life. And this episode showed me some things that like still managed to upset me, you know?
Yeah.
And my whole reaction to the episode, honestly, can be summed up in the Anchorman meme from with Will Ferrell, and he's like, "I'm not even mad. I'm impressed." You know, basically, like it's there's a lot of audacity in the episode of what they decided to show, and so I'm just impressed that they went there. Like they're just wow, they're really going for it.
They did.
I will say something I've become more keenly attuned to in recent weeks, Don. as we've been progressing on this Decoding TV experiment is I think a lot of people want to watch a show like Lord of the Rings or Rings of Power with their families.
Mm-hmm.
And the thing is, I believe all the Lord of the Rings movies were PG-13, if I'm not mistaken.
They were, but they also have quite a bit of violence. There's a beheading in the first movie. Like, Peter Jackson flexes his horror movie director skills pretty heavily.
Totally. But this one is like a hard R, I would say. Like, this episode, I would say, is hard R. Just with the amount of blood, stuff spouting from wounds, blades going into bodies. Like, it felt like a hard R to me, which is like not what I expected.
I don't know if I would agree that it's a hard R, but it's definitely skirting that PG-13 line because there was a lot of blood. Like, and there's blood.
That's what I'm saying. In PG-13 movies, there's usually not blood. They don't usually show blood in PG-13 movies. Mm. They usually don't show blades going into bodies. Like, you don't physically, you see it implied, but you don't actually see it happening.
Mm-hmm.
So when I saw a blade going into a body, not once, but multiple times, I'm like, I really feel like this has kind of gone in a human body, no less. An orc. You know, they killed a lot more orcs than humans, I think, in the Lord of the Rings movies. Anyway,
yes,
really vicious, I would say, and upsetting to me. But well done. But well done. I'm always impressed when a work of art can upset me. I will say that an episode like this is a payoff episode. It's like a payoff for everything that's come before. And I think that no matter how well done an episode like this can be, it really is going to rise and fall based on how well you feel like all the other plots have been set up prior to this point, right?
Mm-hmm.
And I think you and I have differing opinions on that, and that's okay.
Okay.
But I just want to point that out, that like, yes, it's extremely well made, but it's supposed to pay off, I think, basically 2 to 3 plot lines that like are now like converging on this one position, literally, physically, geographically.
Yep.
And if you don't feel like those plot lines were particularly well set up, then it will be less satisfying than if you do. So just wanted to point that out, that I think it, like an episode like this should be evaluated on more than just the craft, which is excellent, but on like how well it works narratively.
Yeah. Yeah.
So all that said, let's get into the episode. The episode begins and mostly takes place in the Southlands.
Yeah, there are only a few scenes where they cut away.
Yeah, yeah. And it's basically a bunch of characters meet, converge on one position, right? Elendil, Isildur, Galadriel, Halbrand, they're basically the Queen Regent, they all make it to the Southlands. And we have Adar and Bronwyn and Arondir at the Southlands kind of trying to like battle it out for supremacy. Got to point out, Don, a couple of the theories that have been put forward by the Rings of Power, Lord of the Rings community.
Dead on arrival.
I think I've been definitively proven wrong in this episode, right?
Yeah.
I would say the biggest one being that the Southland stuff might be taking place at a different time period. There were no multiple meteors. It was all just one period of time because...
And you know what? That's fine. I'm not mad about it. I think had
multiple queen regents. Okay. Anyway, sorry.
I think had this episode not had the emotional payoff that I felt, because I mean, I didn't really hold fast to those theories. It was fun to theorize, but like, if it turned out that none of it was right, I wanted what they did choose to go with to feel emotionally fulfilling. And I definitely felt that.
Yeah, yeah. The other theory, I guess, maybe that has been proven incorrect is like any theories about who Halbrand is. Like this episode does seem to reaffirm that Halbrand was the king of the Southlands. But...
And David, I would usually agree with you if mm-hmm. this was a season finale. However... Mm-hmm. This was episode yes. 6, not episode 8.
All right.
8.
So you're still hanging on to the Halbrand might be.
Still holding on. Still
okay.
holding out.
Okay.
I don't know if it's hope, but I will say this. If it turns out, as so many of my theories are, that I was wrong, I would like to hop over to another theory that Halbrand may in fact be the Witch King of Angmar, which I think is also potentially plausible.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm. Okay. Okay. Well, anyway, I think I'll just say this, Don. You know, that we'll probably find out who Hal Brand really is by the end of the season.
I hope so.
Or a different way to put that is who we understand Hal Brand to be may not have changed by the end of the season, and that will be its own information as well. But I do think that it is worth considering that, like, if none of these theories turn out to be true, like, I think that does tell us something about the type of show that we're watching.
I think I will look back on this first season as being like, and you said it really well, David. It's like, oh yeah, he's the lost king, and we're three episodes in. Wow, that was, and like, I will have the exact same opinion. Like, yeah, that was rushed. That pacing, like, yeah. I've said it once, I'll say it again. The pacing of the show is all over the place.
Yeah,
but I'm still holding out hope. Just the teeniest, tiniest bit of hope.
All right, fair enough. You do have one theory still in play though, Don, which is who the stranger is, right? We didn't even visit that character this episode.
No.
I did want to read an interesting comment from Decoding TV, actually, because we're not going to talk about the stranger today really at all. But there's a big debate about whether or not the stranger is Gandalf or not, right? Mm-hmm. And your current operating theory is that it's a Balrog, right?
I have a theory that it could potentially be a Balrog, yes. I will say, I think I'm starting to lean a little bit more towards Gandalf now, only because we didn't see anything else besides the Southlands this time.
Well, Matt from Iowa over at decodingtv.com posited maybe the stranger could be Saruman. I don't know if you feel that way. He's supposed to be older and more powerful than Gandalf. Baron TW over at decodingtv.com wrote, "The stranger could well be Gandalf at this point, which is totally the show jumping the shark." And I said, "What do you mean it's jumping the shark?" And he says, or he or she says, "As a book reader, I'm not a fan when it breaks established lore and Gandalf does not arrive until well into the Third Age. He isn't present when Isildur gets the One Ring, which is clear in Lord of the Rings. He isn't around when the rings are made. He doesn't recognize Bilbo's ring as Isildur's as he arrives 1,000 years after it went missing. He's a character we know a lot about. His getting his ring when he arrives in Middle-earth is a choice by Cerdan to give it to Gandalf and not to Saruman." End quote. So,
totally fair assessment. I will only say that they are taking quite a few creative liberties with this show, for better or worse. They are changing, or, well, not necessarily changing, but adding a lot of their own sort of storylines. Galadriel's storyline, for the most part, is entirely the work of Amazon. So it would not surprise me if they are also changing Gandalf's lore. But that's also partially why I'm thinking it's not Gandalf, because it seems really obvious. And again, this might be one of those Hal Brand situations where I look back and I go, ooh, okay, well.
That's what I'm saying. I think if it's like, if those three theories are all proven wrong, right? Like, then it's like, okay, then the show is probably just going to take like the simpler path each time.
Yeah.
I'm not saying we're conclusively on that yet, because
certainly
the way this episode ended is like shocking, right? So like opens up the door for like a lot of other surprises and interesting things to happen, but it could also just be the most obvious choice, right? That is for each of these things. Anyway, I appreciate you being open to the full panoply of possibilities.
That's half the fun of having these weekly shows instead of binging it. You can talk mm-hmm. about it and
yes,
have
totally.
All these fun theories.
Yes,
and look, totally. If it turns out that I'm wrong about everything, I'm all right. I'm not going to be mad.
I mean, I will make fun of you for a really long time about it.
Totally fair. Cool with you. And okay. As you should. I would do the exact same thing to you.
And if you turn out to be right, then you can make fun. It's totally good. You can lord it over me forever. That's amazing.
Yeah.
Okay, we start in the Southlands. Am I pronouncing it wrong? Is it Adar or Adar? It's Adar.
It's Adar.
Right?
It's a short
Sorry.
A, yeah.
Sorry about that. Adar. He is kind of touching the ground, I think, in ultra close up. He's giving a speech to the orcs. And there is a pretty impressive shot where the shot kind of goes upwards from like close up, and then you see he's in front of hundreds of orcs, right? It's really impressive. Okay, well, we just had a catastrophic failure with our recording system, Zencastr. So if you're watching or listening to this, we have switched over to a completely different system, and that's why we may look or sound a little bit different. Sorry about that, but And I just want to, I would normally just try to make it seamless, but it's going to look and sound different probably. So that's why I'm pointing it out.
David, you look even more beautiful.
I know. It actually does look pretty good on this system. Okay. So we were just talking about Adar, and one of the things I was pointing out was that it's interesting that he says in this scene, quote, for the first time you do so, like they're returning, not as unnamed slaves in faraway lands, but as brothers and sisters in our home, which is kind of humanizing the orcs. It's kind of like that scene in Star Wars, The Force Awakens, when you realize that, hey, there's actually people under those stormtrooper helmets. And now it's like, wow, I don't know if I'm cool with all these orcs getting murdered relentlessly throughout the course of all the Lord of the Rings films. But what do you think is going on here, Don?
David, I think it's safe to say that you can still be cool with watching orcs get mowed down. The origin of orcs was very much changed every so often by Tolkien in earlier drafts. They were going to be like clay golems. I think at one point they were going to be like automatons or spirits or something. But the sort of main idea that we get from the Silmarillion, the sort of back story of all of it, is that Sauron's master Morgoth took a bunch of elves, captured them, and corrupted them and turned them into his own sort of race of followers, basically.
Interesting. So they were already bad apples to begin with, you know? There's nothing redeemable about those creatures, right?
There's no coming back from the way orcs are, even in the Second Age. Mm-hmm. No.
So Lord of the Rings, The Rings of Power, a franchise that believes in good over evil, but not in redemption? Don Marshall?
Well, there are certainly stories of redemption, but I think there are also stories of beings, people, things that are too far gone.
Mm-hmm. Interesting.
And in this case, the orcs are just, there's no trying to save them. I'm sorry.
So they march on the tower, and they get to the tower. These orcs and Adar march to the tower. They get to the tower. There's nothing there except Arondir, who is going to F their S up, as you might say.
Yes, he will indeed.
The villagers have evacuated, and Arondir basically destroys the entire tower, and Adar makes the first of what are several death-defying moves this episode, barely escaping with his life. Any thoughts on this entire opening sequence with Arondir seemingly killing Adar, but not really?
Yeah, I mean, I had no thoughts that he was actually going to die like that.
That would have been pretty bold, though, wouldn't it? It have been so bold if he just died.
It would have been a choice.
Yeah, right, like there, yeah.
It would have been the wrong choice, but, you know, that's certainly... No, I like this. It's a nice little action sequence, and it's very realistic to me. Ismael Cruz Cordova, the way he does his archery is really smooth and effortless, and he, the way he portrays an elf... just seems really, really well done to me. And, you know, the shot with the fire and bringing down the tower, like, all right, that's part one. But you kind of get the sense that, like, there's still more to come. So I like the way that they crafted that scene. Nice little fun detail, though, if I may.
Yeah, please.
One of the orcs yells out the word Gimbatul. And if you see in the subtitles, it says find them. And those that know the lettering around the One Ring, part of the word Gimbatul is in there. It's Ashknaz Gimbatul, which is part of the One Ring to rule them all, One Ring to find them. And it quite literally, they used Gimbatul to mean find them, and the orcs use find them, to search for the villagers.
Very, very cool. I think this episode really gives us what a lot of us are looking for when we watch a Lord of the Rings show / franchise / series. Elves shooting large arrows at things accurately, you know, and I think...
Yeah, I want more of that.
Yes, definitely have a lot of that in this episode. There's a brief scene on the ship as the Numenoreans are about to arrive to the Southlands and help save them. The whole time in the back of my mind, Don, I was still thinking to myself, maybe it's going to be in a different timeline, but, you know. Anyway, there's a little conversation where Isildur talks with Galadriel, and it's revealed that actually elves can see better and farther than humans, right?
Oh, yeah. This is a nice little callback or an homage to the Peter Jackson scene in The Two Towers. Legolas, what do your elf eyes see? And Legolas has way better eyesight, and elves do than humans. And so, yeah, that is a nice little nod to Peter Jackson there.
There's also a brief conversation between Elendil and Galadriel, and they talk about Elendil's wife, Isildur's mom, who drowned. Don't know if that's going to become important later, but it seems like it's a death that haunts them still, right?
Yeah, definitely seems like that's going to be a sort of recurring trauma that is pretty influential on the family and the choices that the family makes.
One question, Don Marshall, is how quickly do you think it took for them to get from Numenor to the Southlands? Because it feels like if it's like Middle Earth is a whole other place, right, it should be potentially weeks.
Yeah. So it will most likely be potentially weeks. And I think they made the right call in just skipping over all of that, right? I don't want an entire episode of Galadriel on a boat. That doesn't sound interesting to me.
It would definitely be wild to just have a plot line of characters and creatures that are just traveling the entire time, like an entire plot line all season. That would be wild. Right?
It would be the equivalent of Gandalf and the Éomer and the rest of the Rohirrim just riding on horses to try and rescue them at Helm's Deep. And like, maybe they yell over the thundering of hooves. It's like, so you're a wizard.
Yes, I am. Thank you.
Like, nobody wants to see that. Let's skip to the good stuff. And thankfully we do. But I will say, if folks are wondering how they got there so fast, we do see a cool view of a map. And the map lets us know that they are traveling from Numenor, which is west of Middle-earth, east towards a place called the Bay of Belphalas, which is a little river with, I think it's called a delta, where all of these sort of tiny islands exist within the mouth of this river. And so they are taking the Bay of Belphalas up the river north. And if you take that river far enough, you will eventually get to the land that eventually becomes Minas Tirith. In this case, they are going less north, so it's not going to take them nearly as long. I'm very glad they skipped over that stuff. I know it's a pacing issue. This show has it. But I think they cut out all of they trimmed the fat there.
Indeed. We cut to the Southlands. Arondir is there, and I guess the idea is that they head faked the orcs into thinking they're going to be in the tower, but in fact, all the village people have just come back to the village, and they're now going to prep for their last stand there, right?
Yep. Yep.
There's a conversation between Theo and Bronwyn, where Bronwyn asks Theo, "Hey, you got to protect the other kids who can't fight in the tavern. Like, wait there." And then gives that poem that we heard at the beginning of the podcast episode. Now,
love that.
This sounded very familiar to me, Don Marshall. It sounded very similar to the speech that Samwise gives Frodo at the end of The Two Towers, if I'm not mistaken, right?
Yeah. I think this episode really leans into the homages to Peter Jackson, and you know, whether or not they succeeded is a matter of opinion. I quite like this. It was a nice little setup. Felt very Tolkienian to me, the light and the darkness, and you know, there's some good in this world. The shadow is but a passing thing, and beauty. It felt very, very much in line with the spirit of Tolkien to me.
Well, I guess I gotta ask you, Don, to me, like... Here's the case against this scene, okay?
Oh, no, please.
To me, I feel like when Sam gives that speech to Frodo, he's like extemporizing it. He's not reading from a poem or memorizing a poem, right? That was my read of it in The Two Towers.
Yeah.
But when you hear Bronwyn give this, it almost sounds like both her and Samwise are drawing from the same text. Does that make sense?
Which
then like kind of, you know, whether or not that makes what Sam says later less special is up to you. But to me, I'm like, well, if they were both just, you know, drawing from the same thing, then what is that? Is there a poem that they all common text that they
no,
all
no I think
from?
It's I think it's just the way that Tolkien wrote. The themes of Middle Earth are so much about the light versus the darkness, and how the shadow won't last, and you know, good will win, but at what cost. And I don't necessarily think they're trying to say like, yeah, this is just Sam's pulling out a speech from a text or Bronwyn's pulling out. Like, yeah. It just felt kind of like a...
On the, like, the flip side, like, the positive reading, right, is that it's... that there's just kind of tales or morals or proverbs that kind of people pass on.
Yeah, yeah.
Right?
Yeah.
And that it's kind of part of, yeah, like it's part of a culture, basically, to believe in these things. So
yeah, that's what I read into it.
Yeah. Arendir and Bronwyn have a tender moment. Arendir pulls out the Alfrin seeds.
Yes, yes. So the Alfrin seeds are Alfrin is the elven word for the Symbolmuna flowers. We see those in the Two Towers. They are the white flowers that grow on the graves of the kings of Rohan. I believe you see Theoden holding one in the Two Towers.
Mm. Very cool. And Arendir and Bronwyn finally kiss. Which is first time we see it in the show. So, and he kind of makes the case. He's like, we'll be together for, you know, and it's going to be lovely. And what do you think is romance, Don? Is it working for you? I'm curious.
It's working for me to an extent. Yeah. I think the two characters have great chemistry together. Nazanin Boniadi and Ismael Cruz Cordova are very much like simpatico together. They work good as actors. I don't necessarily know if the story itself is going to go anywhere because we know that there are only three unions between elves and humans.
Oh.
And I'm just sort of watching this.
Interesting. So that is a part of the lore. I see. Interesting.
A part of the lore is that there are only, it's Aragorn and Arwen and then two others, one in the end of the First Age and another in the middle of the First Age. So those are the only canon ones. Right. Now, it is entirely possible that they will just ignore that.
Isn't it possible they'll get together and it's like secret and no one knows about it? You know, like...
Yes, yeah. That is another alternative that they could.
Another possibility, Bronwyn was vaporized this episode. That's another thing that could happen.
Yeah, so it's entirely possible.
So we will see. We will see what happens with that. Anyway,
yeah.
I would say that it's okay. It's not terrible, but like I don't think that we really spent enough time with these characters together to really root for them. You know, you're more in the community than me. Like, I don't know how many people are shipping Bronwyn and Arendir, you know?
I think deep down we all kind of know that they're probably doomed some way or another. If we're following the lore, right? Mm-hmm. If we're following this to this end, yeah, this feels like a bit of a Romeo and Juliet situation, if you understand me.
Yeah. All right. The orcs attack. And this is what makes up the bulk of the episode, right? Orcs lighting up their torches. They're coming from far away. There's so many of them. It's incredible. Kind of like, I thought the way it began was a little bit awkward. Like when basically Bronwyn confronts an orc and then like the orc like kills a woman, like slits the throat of a woman randomly. I was like, how did that woman get there? Anyway, but after that, so that was a little odd. But then she kind of lights this wagon on fire and like pushes it into the orc and they starts like freaking slamming into these things and igniting them on fire. It looks incredible. So
yeah, I loved that sequence. I was a little concerned. I'm like, how are they actually going to fight them? But that whole like trapping them in between the fire, fish in a barrel scene, I thought that was really smart.
Yeah. They clearly home aloned their whole village, right? They like set everything up to kind of, I mean, they did that with the tower as well, which was pretty impressive. By the way, I meant to ask, like, was it weird that they like destroyed that tower? Was that tower like super important? No.
Nah, I think they made it up for the TV show.
Okay. Okay, that's good. There is no lore behind the tower.
No, I got nothing.
Arendir fights a huge orc, and one of my favorite shots from this episode is there is a sequence when Arendir is on a roof, like he's kind of like shooting arrows from the roof, and then his buddy shooting arrows. His buddy gets like taken out by stabbing, and then Arendir gets yanked back and like falls off the roof and like bounces, you know, off the roof. And they do it all in one continuous shot, so it really does. I don't know that they. I think actually, he probably gets up afterwards, and you see it's Ismael Cruz Cordova. Now they could have done a digital like Texas switch in there. They could have like switched them out, but the fact that they tried to do a lot of this stuff in one long continuous shot, I thought was impressive this episode.
Yeah, I really liked that part. That was, and there's a few moments like that. They don't last for like really long takes, like the Children of Men one shot that lasts for like 6 or 7 minutes. But this was really cool. Some sequences of it reminds me of John Wick in that they are kind of staying on the action rather than making a lot of weird jump cuts to hide the punches. Like, it's very much all there. You see it. I thought it was really well done.
Well, there's a scene when he fights this massive orc, and it honestly felt like it was shot to be in one long continuous shot. Like, they did cut away from it eventually, but it like the framing of it is kind of like a medium wide shot, and you kind of are able to see all the action play out in the environment. He stabs the orc in the eye. You know, I don't know. In general, the show kind of shows us that once you stab a thing in the head, it usually is able to kill it, but maybe not the super orc.
The show has also established that much larger orcs don't really deal with pain the same way normal orcs do. Like when Legolas shoots the guy carrying the torch in the two towers, that thing is like 7.5 feet tall. So this thing, I think, is sort of in that same vein of massive orc needs to be dealt more damage to die.
Fair enough. And I think there's actually some really good storytelling taking place here where he stabs the orc in the eye. There's like black blood bleeding all over his face. This scene goes on for a really long time. Like, you really see the thing go into the eye, and then he like pulls it out, and then the blood like gets all over his face and mouth, and it's like, wow, they're really focusing on this, but turns out there's a storytelling reason for it, which I appreciate. But wow, they really luxuriated in that orc blood, did they not?
They did. They did. It was a lot. That was one of the first moments that, like, you know, the slitting of the throat, the slow sword stab. Sure, okay, but like when it's like dripping like close to his mouth, I'm just like, oh, okay. Gross.
And you know, it was a good primer for the horrors that would be to come for the rest of the episode, right?
Yeah.
Because then what ends up happening is the fight basically is over once Arandir defeats the big orc, and it's like, hey, we all did a good job. Well, anyway,
excuse me, Bronwyn defeats the big orc and stabs him through the neck.
That's right. I apologize.
Credit where credit's due.
No, that is so true. I apologize. I did not mean to abridge her contributions. So
no, you're good.
So they start noticing, hey, wait a second. This isn't black blood on these armor outfits and stuff like that. And so basically what I think we are led to understand is that Adar used the defectors to fight back against the original village people. Of course, they all died, but still, it's horrifying to know that you helped to kill your buddies or that Adar turned friend against friend, neighbor against neighbor, and so on, right?
And that's what happens, right? That is quintessential Tolkien, right? There's something to be said for like the shock and awe of turning humans against each other, because that is Sauron's, you know, one of his main tactics.
Indeed. So they go inside, or actually, as they make this realization,
yes,
a hail of arrows descends upon the entire village. It is brutal, dude, because you're seeing people just get off the left and right. It is brutal, man. And
it's Game of Thrones level, like, oh, they're all dead.
And Bronwyn gets shot. Like, and I almost thought they were going to kill Bronwyn. Like, I thought Bronwyn was dead.
I did too. Yeah. I did too. I'm like, okay, that's a choice. I was honestly, I think it could have been a very interesting choice.
Oh, yeah, totally.
For Theo's character.
Yeah.
I don't necessarily know where they go from here.
But I mean, I think that the torture that this show subjects Bronwyn to is astonishing in this episode, because she gets shot, I think, twice, maybe once, but like,
yes, she gets shot once in the leg, I think, and another in the,
it like goes through her torso, right? Yeah, and then they go into the tavern, and then there's a really long graphic sequence where they literally, like, they show all the steps of treating that arrow. First they break off part of it, and then they like takes it out of the wound, and that's all excruciating. Then they cauterize it, and Bronwyn is in agony the whole time, and they cauterize the front of it and then the back, and it's like, oh, we got to do the other side now. I'm like, oh my gosh, I can't believe they're showing this entire thing. And then it head fakes you into thinking Bronwyn might have died. And I was going to be like, holy crap. Are they really going to like torture this character for like 10 minutes and then kill them? Because if so, bold move, Lord of the Rings. But they did not do that. They did not do that. She actually survives. No.
I think that was I'm as of right now, six episodes in, I think that was the right call. We'll see how this affects her character and Theo and Arendir going forward.
Yeah. Yeah. But holy shit, man. Like,
yeah,
it's
yeah.
Okay. So, okay. I already saw, like, at this point in the episode, Don, okay, I've already seen, like, a dagger or arrow thing get pulled out of a big orc's eye. I've seen Bronwyn get shot with arrows, then basically rendered into excruciating pain during the cauterizing process. But the horrors that the episode has are not even close to over.
No.
Because then Adar shows up, right?
Yeah.
And he comes in the door, and he needs the dagger from the dagger chunk.
The sword that grows with smoke and blood when you...
Now, earlier, Arendir had hid that in a place that theoretically no one saw, right?
There's a quick little shot as Arendir is walking away to hide the sword of Theo just sort of glancing up at him, and I'm like, yeah, the kid knows. Mm-hmm. The kid knows.
Mm-hmm. And then Adar's like, okay, I'm just going to start killing people left and right. And so he just starts offing people, and like the way he does it, this is what was so upsetting to me, Don, was like, you see like it's this slow blade go into these people and they're like screaming in agony and, you know, really upset about it.
Yeah, it's gruesome.
It's horrifying. It haunts me. I'm not joking. I'm not exaggerating. Like those images are like seared into my brain because they're so upsetting.
Yeah. Yeah.
And then Theo's like, okay, I'm going to give you the dagger. And Arendir's like, no, you know, because Arendir knows more people are going to die if you give him the dagger. Right. Yeah. But the whole time I was thinking to myself, Theo, maybe you could have spoken up about 3 seconds earlier or 60 seconds earlier.
It's one thing to watch villagers die, but when they've got a sword to your mom's neck and they're like, oh, you're next. Okay, 3, 2. It's that final moment.
Yes. The person who they stabbed 10 seconds earlier, their wife or husband is like, come on, Theo. You couldn't have just opened your mouth like 60 seconds earlier? You know, anyway. So then they uncover the dagger, and Adar gives the dagger to Waldreg and says, like, I have a task for you, right?
Yes.
And that is the point at which Numenor rides in and kicks ass. Now, before we get to all the stuff that happens after this, curious if you have any thoughts on all this Adar stuff or anything else we talked about.
Really enjoyed the action sequence. Yeah. I thought, while it was bloody, like we have really not seen before in this show, I thought the action sequence was really well produced. Adar is a character unto his own. I know a lot of people thought he was originally Sauron. I 100% do not think he is at all. And I kind of like that they are sort of giving him his own agency or sort of character arc. I thought that was really well done.
The Numenoreans arrive riding on horseback, and it looks incredible to see them all like riding across the countryside. I don't even know how they did it. You know, maybe they did it for real. Maybe there was some CG, but it looks amazing, right? Like
this is mostly real.
Yeah.
From people that I've talked to.
Yeah.
This is mostly
real. And it's spectacular. Like it's really just awe inspiring. So they show up, they basically kick everyone's ass. There's a bunch of like little action moments. I'm happy for you to highlight any that you want to. I'll just say everything Galadriel does is like really cool. She's like hanging off the sides of horses and dodging arrows and doing all this stuff. Like everything Galadriel is doing is really cool. So like I'm enjoying all that stuff. But yeah, what do you want to highlight from the action scene here?
Well, obviously, props to Morvith Clark and the stunt riders and everybody that did all of that stuff, because I thought those were really cool moments. I do. I do want to highlight, it's really silly, and it's a nitpick that I know doesn't matter, but one of Isildur's friends, Valandil, does something really stupid and jumps off a horse to tackle two orcs, and it works in his favor a few seconds later because his friend, who is not on a horse, Ontimo, is in danger, and he wouldn't have been there if he hadn't jumped off the horse. I'm just really questioning, like... There were different ways to do that. And again, that's like super, super nitpicky. Mm-hmm. But it's one of those things. I'm like, you don't get off the horse. You don't get off the horse. Mm-hmm. That's the rule.
If there's one takeaway you have from this entire 8-episode podcast, you do not get off the horse, right?
Don't get off the horse. And maybe someone who has like been involved in cavalry war games before will correct me.
Yeah. You're inviting, you know, all those medieval reenactors to really go in on you this week, Don. So
please, I welcome it. I will say, do you want to talk about the chase sequence?
So a chase sequence ensues. Adar is heading into the forest. Galadriel goes after him. Again, this is some really cool stuff too. Like at one point, she's riding a horse down a hill, which is really difficult and dangerous to do. And Halbrand also goes after him.
Yep. And Halbrand takes basically the opposite side and loops around. How he knew where to find them?
Whatever.
I'm not going to worry too much. Again, that's one of those nitpicks. Yeah. I'm like, it's fine. Two things. One, that horse should be dead. That horse should 100% be dead. Again,
you mean the horse that Halbrand kind of throws a stick in front of and then it falls?
They tripped up. That's
It's a brutal fall that the horse takes. Yeah.
Yeah. Two. Really awesome detail and yet another homage to the Peter Jackson movies. Galadriel says Norolim, Norolim, and that is the same two words that Arwen says in The Fellowship of the Ring when she is running away from the Ringwraith, Norolim, and it means run swift. So nice little tip of the hat to Peter Jackson there.
All right. Well, they capture Adar. There's like a very brief fight that ensues. And Adar is asked by Halbrand, do you remember me? You know, and Adar says, no, I don't remember you at all. Like, did I kill someone that you love? A woman, a child, kind of taunting him. And and Halbrand's about to finish Adar off, but Galadriel's like, no, we need him alive. So...
Oh, no, I need him alive, is what she said.
Got it.
And that felt very point-like. That felt very intentional by the writers.
Mm-hmm, mm-hmm. So then basically, like, the battle is over. The Numenoreans come in, they kick everyone's ass and subjugate the orcs, and everything seems to be fine. It's all just wrap up from this point forward, you know? It's all just winding down from this point forward. The
great end to the season one of Rings of Power.
Isildur, Ontimo, and Valandil have a chat about what happens next, and... I don't remember which one of them is basically like, I've already seen enough of war. Like, this has already been super upsetting to me, but...
That's Ontimo. Yeah, Ontimo. Ontimo, the blonde hair.
Yeah, he's like, I'm good. And then so, and what ends up happening? Like, what's the state of play with these characters at the end of this episode, Don? Putting aside the big thing.
So Isildur and Valandil are going to work with Galadriel and potentially the Queen Regent to track down the orcs that escaped. And Muriel is just kind of hanging out here, doing whatever it is she is doing to sort of present Halbrand, as king. There's this really great conversation, between, Muriel and Bronwyn about like, hey, good job. You did it. And it's like, I didn't want to be the leader. And, I thought that was really nicely done.
Yeah. And as far as we know, Halbrand does seem to be the king of the South, you know?
Yeah. So yeah, what a great way to wrap up this season, you know? Was it a little rush writing? Sure. But I'm telling you, if I'm wrong, you can make fun of me for the rest of my life, but I feel it in my bones.
You feel it in your bones that Halbrand is not actually the king of the South. This will be a pretty big head fake, I have to say. Like, they have Galadriel saying it, they have Numenoreans marching because of it, and then they have this kind of emotional scene where it's like, hey, are you the king that was promised? Yes, I am. Big emotional music, right? Like, it's actually, I would argue that it's actually, if you look back at like the Lord of the Rings movies, it'd be unlike those movies to give to do something like that. Would you agree? Like to basically,
I would agree. Yes, and that is why I think they are going with that direction. But maybe I'm wrong, and maybe it will be a triumphant moment, and I'll rewatch season one again and just have a completely different headspace. But there's something about him, man. There's just something about him.
Hey, I'm Ryan Reynolds. At Mint Mobile, we like to do the opposite of what Big Wireless does. They charge you a lot, we charge you a little. So naturally, when they announced they'd be raising their prices due to inflation, we decided to deflate our prices due to not hating you. That's right. We're cutting the price of Mint Unlimited from $30 a month to just $15 a month. Give it a try at mintmobile.com/switch.
$45 up front for 3 months plus taxes and fees. Promo rate for new customers for limited time. Unlimited more than 40 gigabytes per month slows. Full terms at mintmobile.com.
When you're ready to pop the question, the last thing you want to do is second guess the ring. At BlueNile.com, you can design a one-of-a-kind ring with the ease and convenience of shopping online. Choose your diamond and setting. When you find the one, you'll get it delivered right to your door. Go to BlueNile.com and use promo code LISTEN to get $50 off your purchase of $500 or more. That's code LISTEN at BlueNile.com for $50 off your purchase. BlueNile.com, code LISTEN.
The other major thing that happens this episode is that there's a big confrontation between Galadriel and Adar. And this is, I thought, was pretty interesting because Adar is an ex-elf or an elf turned evil. And obviously Galadriel thinks of herself as the opposite of that, right? Mm-hmm. But Adar kind of implies, actually, maybe you're close. You and I are not so different, perhaps, right? So a lot of interesting details in this conversation. In Lord of the Rings, there's a term called Uruk-hai, right? Yes. What does Uruk-hai mean, Don Marshall?
So Uruk-hai is basically the crossbreed that Saruman was creating in Isengard. There are other Uruks, just called Uruks, that Saruman uses. They're referred to as the Uruks of Mordor. So this is sort of like, I think this might confuse a few people, but Uruk-hai is Saruman. Uruk is Sauron.
Gotcha. But Uruk-hai are kind of like super-powered orcs. Is that a fair way to think about them?
Yeah. So the Uruk-hai are a crossbreed between humans and orcs, and Saruman basically creates them. They don't pop out of holes in the ground. That's a Peter Jackson thing that I have major issues with, but that's not important right now. They can go out. Uruk-hai can go out in sunlight, and they travel really fast, and they don't get as tired, and they're super big and muscly, and the orcs, Sauron's orcs, are more like, I don't want to say rats, but they can be more associated with rats, and they're scrawnier and maybe not as tough.
Mm-hmm. In this scene, we learn who Adar is, and can you help us understand who Adar is?
Yes. So this is kind of what I had mentioned before, in that Adar is seemingly, according to him, one of the first elves in Middle-earth to be captured by Sauron's master and pumped full of that dark magic and corrupted. Now, he doesn't look like the orcs we see in the Second Age, so I'm led to believe that this was sort of a gradual process of Sauron's master Morgoth basically continually corrupting elves and creating this army over many, many years.
Yeah, she refers to Moriandor. Now, Moriandor is like the type of creature that Adar is, correct? If I understood that correctly.
I believe so, yeah. Yes. I'm going to be honest. Having only watched this episode like 12 hours ago, that part did escape me. I believe it translates into Sons of the Dark. Yeah. Because Mordor translates into, is it the land of the dark, or the dark land, or the black land, or shadow land, land of shadow, something like that. So there's some entomology or the naming conventions, I think, that they are utilizing to sort of give them a title of their own.
Yeah. Any other thoughts or details from this confrontation that you want to mention, Don?
Yeah. So two things that I think really caught my eye. I thought this was a remarkably well-written scene. Definitely sort of the contrast of good versus evil. Adar basically giving this speech saying, you know, Sauron brought order to these ruined and chaotic lands. I sacrificed a bunch of my children to Sauron for his needs. And then he eventually says, I killed Sauron. And of course, you know, we've seen the Peter Jackson movies. So has Galadriel. I don't believe you. All of that stuff.
I had thought that. So in the Lord of the Rings movie, Sauron initially has humanoid form. Is that correct? Am I remembering that correct?
Yes.
So he initially has humanoid form, and then he kind of then becomes an all-seeing eye. Like
The eye thing is actually a movie only thing. Uh-huh. The physical eye. We don't actually see Sauron in physical form in the Lord of the Rings trilogy. He is referred to as, you know, the great eye of Sauron, and some people believe that is like a metaphor, like he has many spies everywhere. And I think Peter Jackson kind of took that a little bit more literally. Yeah.
I remember him really struggling with, like, how do I depict this? You know, it's so metaphorical, right?
Yeah.
But so we never saw him in humanoid form at all in Lord.
We were.
I thought we saw
him.
Like a flashback of him with like.
We do see him in the prologue of the Rings of Power episode.
Or yeah, Lord of the Fellowship of the Ring. Yes.
So that form was destroyed.
Yeah. And that's kind of what I was thinking when Adar said his speech. Not that he was lying, but that maybe he had destroyed an earlier form of Sauron.
Okay. That's entirely possible. Yeah. They might go that route. Yeah. Yeah.
Okay. He says he killed Sauron. We know Sauron lives later. So somehow Sauron comes back, but we're not sure yet.
Yes.
Yep. How?
All right. Two quick details. Adar makes reference to something called the unseen world in this sort of speech that he is giving. And so the unseen world is something that is well within Tolkien's lore. It's basically, think of it like the place where when Frodo puts on the ring and he sees the ring wraiths in the Fellowship of the Ring as their true form, these sort of like ghostly crowned kings, and then they, you know, stab Frodo. The wraiths exist in sort of a world between the real world and the unseen world. So creatures like Gandalf and Sauron and Saruman, they can, if they would wanted to, travel in this sort of unseen world, potentially unseen. And it's not necessarily like, oh, the unseen world is evil. It's just a place that exists almost separate from the physical world. It's almost like a spirit world, if you will.
Interesting. Okay. And what's the other detail you wanted to point out?
The other detail was a nice little nod to the idea of Tolkien basically saying when Galadriel says your kind was a mistake made in mockery. That holds very true to Tolkien. A lot of what Morgoth did in the First Age was he saw the physical world around him and he said, all right, I can't create life the way that Eru, the god of Tolkien's universe, created life. So I'm going to twist it. To make it my own. So Morgoth and Sauron, they can't create life, but what they can do is they can twist it. So like trolls are the counterparts to Ents, and orcs are the counterparts to elves. And the way that Galadriel phrased that, your kind was a mistake made in mockery, just sort of homing in on the idea that like Sauron and Morgoth and the evil of the world can't create. They can only twist and corrupt.
Interesting. My favorite moment from this whole scene is kind of what I alluded to earlier, where Galadriel kind of gives this big monologue about how I'm going to keep you alive so you can watch everyone you know die. And, you know, Adar points out, not really sure you're the shining beacon of goodness that you purport to be. Fear leads to anger. Anger leads to hate. Hate leads to suffering, you know, is what Adar has pointed out there.
Yoda shows up in season 2.
Yeah. Anyway, there's a scene between Galadriel and Halbrand where they basically thank each other for they basically both stopped each other from killing Adar.
Yep. So they're like, hey, thanks. Yeah.
And then
there's
a moment when it seemed like they're playing into like this romance between them, which I was just like, I don't think so. Show no,
no. I mean, no. We know obviously who Galadriel ends up with because we see it in Fellowship of the Ring. But I've seen multiple responses to this in the 12 hours since I've watched it. Some people think that it's not meant to be romantic, and they're just like, you know, there's a camaraderie there. Others think that was leaning into a little bit more of the romance side. I personally felt a little bit of that tension, but not terribly much. And, you know, I'm fine with it if they want to sort of lean into it just slightly. I thought they towed the line there.
Here's what I wrote in my notes. I'm willing to accept a Bronwyn Arryndir romance, but a Halbrand Galadriel romance? ? That's literally what I typed out when I was watching the show. It feels like, it's not explicit. It's not explicitly romance. He's just like, I felt like something between us, and I really want to hold on to it. And it's like, okay. Hopefully it's just the spirit of camaraderie in battle and not anything more.
Fingers crossed.
What else happens in this episode?
Bronwyn and Muriel have a scene together where they congratulate each other for thank you for rescuing me. Thank you for leading these people. Hey, by the way, here's the King of the Southlands.
That's just BT Dubs. New king just dropped. anyway, so then and then there's a Theo and Arryndir scene that's actually pretty cool. I like this where Theo is like, I was afraid because. Because like I felt the loss of the power, and I thought that was like a cool idea. It's obviously very similar to like losing the ring in Fellowship of the Ring, and you know, and then boy, the full spectrum of emotions I went through this scene when Arryndir is like, well, then you get rid of it, Theo, and he hands him the thing. I'm like, don't trust him to get rid of it. Like he's gonna keep it. Something stupid's gonna happen. Go ahead.
In my brain, Arryndir is like, all right, yeah, I'm gonna let this kid try to do the right thing. If he doesn't,
I'm gonna chaperone him. You know, through the whole.
Oh
process,
yeah.
You know?
Oh yeah. I'm gonna watch you the entire time.
Oh yeah. Totally.
Theo.
Totally.
It's all for naught though, because it's not a sword. It's a fake out. Because it's an act.
I guess Waldreg, like you know, put in something there to make sure it looked like that, you know?
Yeah, so I always saw it as we see the scene where Adar says, Waldreg, I have a task for you. Takes out the sword, hands it to Waldreg, puts another axe in there and just holds onto it as sort of like a decoy. And, you know, that's kind of how we do it.
Waldreg has a sword, plunges it into the ground, turns it in this turnstile key thingy, and then a ton of water just comes rushing through the tunnels that have been built.
Yeah. Okay. Yeah, there was a use for
the tunnels. So this is the thing you called, Don Marshall, is you're like, I don't think the tunnels are just to travel somewhere. I think there's something else going on there. And I think you actually did, if I recall correctly, say like it might be what is used to create like Mount Doom. But maybe I'm misremembering that.
Yeah. I initially thought when I saw the tunnel that they were like going to try and pour the magma in. And Sauron was going to show up last minute and like raise the mountaintops. But no, I really like how they did this.
Interesting.
Because, it felt like they didn't necessarily need the tunnel to just have the orcs move through the Southlands.
Yeah.
Like you could have done that just at nighttime. No, I'm really glad. This was a nice payoff.
The orcs start chanting Udun, which is the name of the episode. And remind us what that means again, Don.
Udun is...
Sorry.
Oh, my God.
Sorry.
I'm totally blanking. Sorry.
Sorry. You delivered it so eloquently earlier. I just wanted to do a callback
Udun,
for the listeners.
Udun is, I believe, the Elvish... it's part of Mordor, and I'm also looking it up right now again. Apparently, it is the Sindarin meaning for... hell or the underworld. I don't know how true that is. Sorry, again, I'm on like 4
it's
hours
okay.
of sleep.
It's okay.
I told you.
Yeah. I'm glad we you know, we warned people in advance this is going to be a little rougher than usual, so it's all good. So everyone's celebrating. The Numenoreans have come in to save everyone. Bronwyn's alive. Arryndir is alive. Theo's alive. Waldreg's alive. Very important, actually. And then all of a sudden, like the mountain in the distance explodes. And it seems to heavily indicate that is, in fact, Mount Doom. And also, probably all the humans in the village are dead. but, yeah. I mean, it is a shocking moment to see that wave of falling lava and rocks approach Galadriel, and she's just kind of standing there because she knows there's really nothing she can do.
I bet you, though, I bet she survives that. Just a theory.
I mean, considering one of the promotional shots on Prime Video is her standing amongst the ashes of a village,
I thought that was a flashback. I thought they were just going to pull that out as a flashback. Mm-hmm. It's like, you have not seen what I have seen. Flashback to a destroyed village. But, like, no, they gave that. They didn't necessarily give it away, but I'm kind of kicking myself for not seeing it coming.
Yeah.
But I like to be taken on the journey rather than, you know, guess. Guess
you,
what happened.
You would never spout off on any wild theories, Don Marshall.
Me? Never.
So, this is a bold move. This is a bold move.
Yeah.
Like,
yeah.
And because I'm also wondering, like, who among the humans is going to survive? Like, I actually hope that the show does kill off a bunch of these people. Not because I don't like them or anything, but because that would be a really bold decision. And also, help to drive probably a lot of Galadriel's motivations moving forward, right?
Yeah, I think we're going to see a very changed Galadriel after this. Because despite everything, it still didn't.
Well, she's like ostensibly responsible for many of these characters' deaths if they do die. You know, like it's possible none of them will die, and we'll start next episode and everyone like rushed into the cellar of the tavern and everyone's fine. I would be very disappointed if that was the case, because I think when you use this visual language, there needs to be a price that is paid for it from the characters.
I think Isildur's
I think Isildur's
friends probably will not make it. I feel like Bronwyn, Theo, and Arendir are all going to live. But other than that, I mean, maybe Muriel, do you think they kill Halbrand? You think they just kill Halbrand?
I don't think so.
And it's one of those subverting expectations.
I don't think Halbrand will die. I think it's possible Bronwyn, Theo, and Queen Regent are dead. That feels like it could be a thing that happens. But who knows? Who knows? Basically, the answer to the question of who died is also going to be the answer to the question of what kind of show we're watching, or how big of a swing the show is willing to take, right?
Yeah.
And if it's willing
this episode?
Yeah, if it's willing to kill off a bunch of people that we just met or met earlier this season, then that's like, okay, like you're playing for keeps. Like you're not effing around, you know, in my opinion.
No. Yeah. No. And I think as important as this episode was to build up hype, I think the consequences going forward in episode 7 and 8 are going to be just as, if not more, important.
I do think that it is stunning that this is episode 6 and not episode 8. Like,
this felt like a season.
It felt like a season finale. And also, by the way, Dawn, how incredible would it have been if it was a season finale? Like, imagine if this was the final episode and we're like, that's it. We're going to need to wait for like a year until we find out what happens to these characters. That would have been pretty impressive as well. Like, I would have been.
I think that would have been really impressive to build up hype. It makes me a little nervous in that if there is not a season ending sort of payoff or joining together of the plots, then it might fall flat for some people.
Right,
but
right.
this was a heck of an episode.
Because typically when all the plots converge is when you'd have your finale, or at least the penultimate episode, right? But the fact that this is episode 6, like, I could see it being episode 7 and then you have like a denouement, but like, this is episode 6. There's two more episodes left. Now, to be fair, we didn't have any action from Harfoots or Elrond or Durin this episode, right? So like, still a lot of stuff to tie up there, but really bold move. And this episode just making bold move after bold move, and it's just I have to respect it. I have to respect it, because like, issues I've had with the show, it's like, okay, you're taking big swings, and I'm still along for the ride. I think also we do see, you know, who definitely did survive the volcano exploding and probably becoming Mount Doom is Adar. We get a shot of the inside of the stable that he was in. And
he disappears.
He has escaped from his chains. And
that may actually be a reference to potentially the unseen world, that I mentioned before, the sort of spirit world that exists. So I'll be very curious to see how they move that forward. But I quite like Adar's character. I'm very looking forward to him continuing to be around for this season, at least.
All right. Any other thoughts on this episode, Don? I thought bold episode, lots going on. I really appreciate you taking the time out super early. Yeah. Don's about to make a big trip. That's why we recorded so early. But appreciate you making this work. It was actually quite a challenge to get this all scheduled and done. And so we hope you as a listener have enjoyed us reacting to what happened in season one, episode 6, The Rings of Power. Any other thoughts, Don?
And final thoughts, just really enjoyed this episode. Couple of nitpicks, but again, I tend to just sort of let those slide. I sort of go by rule of cool. Loved this episode. Loved what Ismael Cruz Cordova did with Arondir. Great performances by Nazanin Bonadi. I thought Morvith Clark did great as well. Loved the payoff for a lot of this stuff. And I think you said it really well, David. Even if you don't agree with all of the choices, you gotta like respect the fact that they're making bold moves.
They're making bold moves.
You cannot agree with the direction they're going. That's totally fair. Yeah. I have criticisms of the show myself, but like the choices they made in this episode were going to lay the foundation for potentially the next five seasons.
You can find more episodes of this podcast at podcast.decodingtv.com. Email us at decodingtv@gmail.com and watch us on TikTok and YouTube at decodingtv. Don Marshall, hit us with where people can find more of your work on the internet this week.
I am Don Marshall 72. You can find me at TikTok, on Twitter, on YouTube, on Instagram, on Patreon. All of it is just Don Marshall 72. Everything's in my link tree, just linktree.com/Don Marshall 72, where you can find all of the stuff that I do, including this podcast.
Alrighty, folks, next week gonna be an interesting one. I think I'm really curious to find out. Wouldn't that be so cool if they didn't even tell us who died in this week? It was an all Durin Elrond episode, and that's it. That would be a total baller move. But I don't think they're gonna do that.
That would be a bold move. Yeah, no, I think we'll see some of the consequences at least.
All right, we'll be back next week with another recap of season one of The Rings of Power. Don Marshall, thank you so much. We will see you later.
Bye bye.
Even when we're on a budget, we still deserve nice things. Quince is a place to scoop up stunning high-end goods for 50 to 80% less than similar brands. They have buttery soft cashmere sweaters starting at $50, luxurious Italian leather bags, and so much more. Plus, Quince only works with factories that use safe, ethical, and responsible manufacturing. Get the high-end goods you'll love without the high price tag with Quince. Go to quince.com/style for free shipping and 365-day returns.